Now, we've talked a lot on the show today about AI and also the role of the internet in the radicalisation of young people following the trial of the Southport murderer, Axel Rudakabana. In the House of Commons, it's lunchtime. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has said that he'd admitted to carrying a knife more than 10 times, which he was able to easily order online. And she criticised technology companies for not removing the dangerous material he was able to access over the internet. So plenty to talk about with the Science and Technology Secretary, Peter Carr. Afternoon, Peter.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm very well. And we'll talk about AI in a moment, because I know that's what you've been talking about. There's loads I want to talk to you about that, from Humphrey to virtual driving licences. I want to talk, though, first of all, about this the conversation around terrorism and this slight sense that, that ministers, governments really around the world, powerless in the face of big tech.
No, we're not powerless in the face of big tech. We actually have quite strident laws when it comes to online content, and that has not changed. But we have new powers that are coming in just this year. So between now and summer, there will be the legal requirement that all people who have access to content online, it has to be age appropriate. So if it's not, we can have quite strident powers to enforce that against the tech companies. And also, there will be a legal requirement to take down illegal content from the platforms. And this is on top of a whole range of other issues that I've already been tackling, like intimate image abuse, since I got in just 6 months ago and became Secretary of State. So, look, there's a lot of talk about what's going on globally, but the law of the land in this country will always stand, and that's immutable in the relationships as the relationships build with these tech companies, and we harness the power of their innovation. Because if people don't feel safe when it comes to technology, they won't be able to use it properly. And we need technology to be used in our country. So safety is absolutely the first step, as you heard from the Home Secretary today.
You're talking about trying to tighten the law. Meanwhile, we've got Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, all aligning themselves to Donald Trump in the US. They're arguing for the freedom of the internet, freedom of speech, deregulation, no content monitors, no fact checkers. Do you feel like you're fighting a losing battle, a lone battle in the UK?
Well, all of the things you've just mentioned were actually aimed at the US market. They don't change the fact that we have requirements for the UK market. Mm. But the other thing that even Mark Zuckerberg announced in that same statement that he made to the camera that time, he did say that they need to do better at taking down illegal content and they need to do better at keeping children safe online. So even though this debate is raging about free speech, the same people are also talking about safety. Even Elon Musk has talked about the existential challenges that AI faces the future. And of course, we in this country with our government is actually playing a leadership role globally on keeping that real front line of AI safe. So look, I'm not suggesting or downplaying the challenges that are posed globally about AI, and most of the companies that we're talking about here are domiciled outside of the UK, mostly in America. But the UK law is the UK law, and it is only the British government and the British Parliament that sets it, and that's not going to change.
When we're talking about what people are posting online, and this doesn't apply to you specifically, because you know this is 10, 15, maybe 20 years in the making. Was there a mistake made by legislators, lawmakers in the UK and maybe in other countries as well, where the internet was treated as this sort of it was all hip and cool and we didn't want to be seen to be interfering with the cool kids in their t-shirts and Silicon Valley, and created this sort of Wild West? And what subsequent governments, and now yours, is trying to do is sort of chip away at it, sort of inching the genie back into the bottle, if you like. And actually, we've seen, you know, in the conversation today what we're talking about, the tension between what I can say on the radio or what I used to be able to say in a newspaper is heavily regulated and contempt of court laws apply and so on. And yet we've seen over in the Southport murder trial specifically a wild west of what could be posted online.
There's a lot in that question and a lot that actually needs to be in the public debate that we have. When it comes to misinformation, there are the contempt courts, the contempt rules apply online as well as offline. And actually, you saw arrests made over the summer for online activity when it came to contempt. So those laws still do apply. But yes, look, the online, as we move to an increasingly online world, of course, we are understanding harms and the need for safety in different ways. Somebody who's 18 years old today was born the year that the iPhone was created and released. And now, back in those days, you and I remember the exhilaration and the excitement about it. We were were aware of all of these things, but we weren't aware of the potential for harm. Yes, you know, the technology that we have in smartphones keeps us connected to far better to friends and family, but it also exposes us to strangers as well in new ways. Now, that is just one example of how we have opportunities, but also challenges posed. And with the way that technology is developed and deployed and the speed with which it is, then it poses a real challenge for us as legislators and governments and enforcement agencies to keep up sometimes. So I'm finding ways where we can have very rapid responses to these challenges. We work with the tech companies. We have a good engagement with the tech companies to understand the technology. And the end point for me is finding out ways to make sure that products and services are safe from the outset. In other words, have safety baked in from the start. Because too often, with online activity, products can be released and then safety is an afterthought and dealt with afterwards. No other product that goes out into our economy, like the table that I'm sitting at now, has had the opportunity to release a product to make safety an afterthought. But it is currently when it comes to large parts of the internet. And that has to change. And that's what my ideal goal is to get to.
So would you accept then that some of the biggest platforms that people are using every day, whether that's Google for searching, Amazon for buying stuff, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram for communicating, would you say they're safe?
Well, in certain circumstances, they're not safe. That's why we're bringing in new laws which will come in this year, so that people creating content and those platforms that are allowing the content to be provided both must make sure that it is age appropriate. If not, we can fine 10% of global earnings, and also we can take criminal sanctions against those people who are doing it within these companies. So these are new powers we have, strident powers, but we have to make sure that the safety of vulnerable people, and I class every child as potentially vulnerable, we've got to make sure that those vulnerabilities are taken care of. All I ask is for those companies who have enormous resources to develop products, make sure that their products are safe before release, that they take a bit more time gathering evidence on the impact it has on people who are using it. And those algorithms could be used to actually reinforce people's sense of safety, not in, as it is currently in some circumstances, not all, but some circumstances, it's used to exploit vulnerabilities for gain. And that's not acceptable. And we have to move forward on these issues.
Given the conversation that's been going on today on the wake of the Southport murders, and we'll move on and talk about the products that you're hoping to release in a moment. On the specific question, and I'm sure this is a conversation happening across government, this question of the contempt of law, contempt of court laws, abided by the media and politicians and institutions, but not by people online. Is there a case for reviewing that law to adjust to a world where, bluntly, some people can reach a much, much bigger audience than I can speaking into this microphone?
Well, just to say that the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of people who interact online, they do obey the rules. They do stick to the law. But there are some people, a few people, who knowingly don't. And it has posed problems. I acknowledge that it's posed problems. You know, these are things that as we move forward and we assess online activity, we assess where harm is happening, where we assess threats and weaknesses to the judicial system, and also our ability to actually deliver justice, because it's really important. People have to understand that the legal system here rests on evidence coming out in court, not coming out in the media, and that enables us to make sure that we have a free and fair trial for all people, and that includes for victims primarily, not just for defendants. So this is an essential way of us moving forward. But yeah, where there are weaknesses, of course, like in any other way of life, we're assessing it to try and see how the law might have to adapt into the future.
Okay, I really appreciate you talking about that, because I know you've been making your speech today on AI, and that was the subject we wanted to talk to you about as well. Tell me about the gov.uk wallet. What will I be able to put in it?
Oh, I am so pleased that you've given me time to do this. So people can interact at the moment with gov.uk as a website. 12 million unique users do every single week. But now I've announced that we'll turn it into an app. And that app will be fully rich and personalized to people's unique experiences and the needs they have from interacting with different public services and parts of the state. So paying fines, paying for services, making sure that your tax on your car is up to date, DWP for universal credit, all these different things. So firstly, we'll have an app which is personalized towards people's needs. In that app, there will shortly follow, which will be released over the summer in June, shortly to follow will be a digital wallet. And then over time, you will find more services adding the cards that you have to carry at the moment into the digital wallet. We're starting with a veterans card. We're starting with those people who have served our country and we believe should be front in the queue in how we recognise them as we move forward as a country with technology. And by the end of the year, we will launch a digital driving licences with both of its functions fully digitised. The first function, proving your eligibility to drive. The second function, being able to prove your age, both in offline world, if you're going to a bar or to buy stuff, from shops that have an age limit. And then secondly, online, a very neat, swift way of using, if you're buying products online, of proving that you are the person you say you are and that you are of the age you need to be to buy services can all be done very swiftly with the gov.uk app. And all of that has started since this government came in. None of this work was underway when I came into office 6 months ago, and all of it will be deployed and available this year. And that is just the start.
We're like, because obviously the risk, as people may have found before, I don't know if you're beeping in and out of the tube or on a train, there's always a risk that your phone battery dies. So will you still have to have a physical driving licence?
Well, at the moment, you do have to have a physical driving licence. And of course, we're deploying the digital version later this year. And we will see in time what the need is. Because at the moment, the law says that we need to have a digital, the paper version as well. And we're going to carry on that for as long as it needs to be. And people need to rest assured that we're not going to artificially remove it and remove something that they may well have a unique reason to keep it. But we'll be keeping an assessment on it. And that just seems, I think, the most logical way forward. But I think when people see how the digital driving license is, how easy it is to actually install on your phone in a digital wallet, how easy it is to access, then I think people will desire it. I don't want people to feel sort of bludgeoned into moving online. We're trying to learn from the tech sector and create products and services as a government that actually are desirable, so that people want to actually use it. And actually, you know, maybe this is even possible for government, Matt. People actually want to use our services because they are just great.
And tell me then about the AI tool being used in government by officials, Humphrey, named after Sir Humphrey Appleby from Yes Minister, who spent his entire time using a word salad to disguise what was really going on.
Yes, well, you've cunningly, because you are so embedded into the Whitehall life, found out the internal nickname that we've given to a suite of different productivity tools. We, as a digital centre of government in the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology, are devising, programming, engineering and deploying AI products and services in a safe and fully tested way to drive efficiencies within government. It's not one product that's called Humphrey, there's a series of them. And if I give you one example, there's a product called Consult. And Consult uses, it's able to analyse all of the legislation going back hundreds of years, all of the regulatory landscapes and rules that regulators have. And when ministers want to get to understand, to make a change in the law or a change in regulations, or even just make an announcement, Consult can look at all of this information and within minutes do what it takes weeks for a civil servant to do, because just imagine the amount of time. So it can deliver it 1,000 times faster than a human being can, and it can do so 400 times more cheaply than a human can. So we're talking about something that currently takes, you can do in 52 hours, that currently with human beings would take 6 years to do. That's the scale of ambition we have as a government. And that is the kind of product that it comes under the Humphrey umbrella that we're using internally.
Is there a risk then that all you need to do is put an AI voice on the end of that and we can do away with ministers?
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful? And I'll be you can't see me at the moment, Matt, so you don't even know if it is me you're talking to.
No, that is true. It's a very good bot.
I guess it drives some kind of suspicion.
I mean, I have done interviews in the past with politicians, but I have been suspicious that I'm getting the same answer regardless of the question. But I feel like we've covered a lot of ground with you today. So, Peter Carl, really good to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks. That's Peter Carl there, the Science and Technology Secretary, making a big announcement about AI today, talking about Humphrey, which we spoke about earlier on, but also that idea of the driving license in your virtual wallet as well. And it was good to be able to catch up with him on some of the government's other thinking of the news stories of the day too.